Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Today we'll be speaking with an old Soapbox friend. She was on one of our very first Soapbox, Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, back in 2009, Deborah Sweet. Deborah Sweet is a Soapbox friend, but she's also a lifelong activist, and she's the National Director of World Can't Wait. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Deborah Sweet, and she and I will be chatting about Spring Rising, an anti-war intervention. Deborah Sweet, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Oh, it's great to be here, Cindy.
Well, you're a guest and an activist well known to our listeners. And the reason that I wanted to chat with you today is because you and I are involved in organizing an upcoming action in Washington, D.C. called Spring Rising, an Anti-War Intervention. And I wanted to chat with you about it so we can give the listeners more information, but also so we can send this interview out and about and just get more people. Deborah, why do you think that Spring Rising is so important right now?
Well, I want to thank you, Cindy, for coming up with the idea. We both had a similar idea back in the fall, and we talked in December, and I think this is very, very good that we have now more than 40 organizations considering the need for really visible protest in Washington on the 12th anniversary of, shock and awe, the completely illegitimate invasion and occupation of Iraq by the U.S., which apparently is morphing into something, shall we say, as bad or even worse. We really don't know, but the potential here is just very terrible. So that's the importance of people protesting.
Well, and as can you speak on this point? Didn't Obama end the war in Iraq? Why should we go to Washington, D.C. and protest it now?
Well, right, and as I ran into some young people after the film American Sniper, who were in their early 20s, didn't the American people vote for the war in Iraq? No and no. This war was pushed down the throats of the world by the Bush regime, which had power in the U.S. at that time. And then, you know, back in the days when we were calling to drive out the Bush regime, our call and our anti-war work really found a lot of resonance in this country and especially around the world. I think people around the world are wondering where the anti-war movement is at this particular moment, and that's part of what we're working on. Obama pledged to end the stupid war. He said that Iraq was a stupid war.
Right.
He wanted to continue the war in Iraq, in Afghanistan. And yes, he did draw troops out very reluctantly. He wanted to leave a bunch of troops there, but
right. The
Iraqis would not agree to his conditions that if he left U.S. troops there, they wouldn't be subject to Iraqi law, so that if U.S. troops killed civilians, for instance, they couldn't be charged with murder in Iraqi courts and prosecuted. He wouldn't agree to that, so everybody came home, and things were drawn down. That's one of the harvests of that, is that we have all this surplus military equipment now on streets of the U.S. when people are thinking about protesting police murder or any other injustice. That's the harvest of this largest war in world history, largest in every way.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of money spent, of course, in the trillions. The amount of people displaced, 4.5 million people displaced within Iraq and out of Iraq. If you look back to 1991 through 2015, probably a million people killed by the U.S.'s actions of sanctions, direct bombing, and certainly disrupting and destroying the Iraqi society. So no, Obama's continued this, and now is in a situation of having put thousands of ground troops back into Iraq,
right,
carrying out bombings of Iraq and Syria in conventional ways and drone strikes across the whole region, everywhere from Iraq to Yemen.
Well, Deborah, it's really important, I think, to point out to people that when Obama did, when the U.S. did pull troops out of Iraq, that that was an agreement that was made when Bush was still president.
Yeah, I mean, Bush was spectacularly unsuccessful with the plans put together by Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz to sweep into Iraq and sweep through Iraq victoriously and overthrow the Islamic leaders of Iran. That's really what they had in mind after 9/11. They knew it had nothing to do with 9/11. Iraq didn't, and certainly the government didn't. Al-Qaeda was not even barely a feature in Iraq at that
point.
Right. But everything the U.S. did, this disaster of destroying all the systems in Iraq, education, legal, sewer, water, a functioning court system, and firing everybody who worked for the government and then being unwilling and certainly unable to govern, and making the U.S., by the way, culpable as a war criminal because you can't occupy another country and deliberately fail to, make it safe for the people living there. This is the direction that Bush went, and when it became apparent after some years that it wasn't very successful, he did want to cut his losses, and they were trying to figure out how can we go at this differently. And along came Obama. We remember this well, right? In 2007 and 2008, trying to burnish his anti-war credentials and saying that this war in Iraq was stupid and that he wanted to end it.
Yeah, but he would actually send more troops to Afghanistan.
Exactly. We remember in December of 2009 when he sent more than 100,000 additional troops into Afghanistan, and that's when the civilian killings really rose. That was the greatest death toll of civilians in Afghanistan when the U.S. sent in all those troops, and the night raids really started, and people were, I think, in some level of denial still in this country in 2009 that Obama probably, he must have meant what he said, we voted for him.
Right, twice, some people said.
Yeah. You know, so we're still encountering, and including on a call we were on today, people saying, well, we voted for him twice.
Right.
And in order to stop the war. Okay, well, you know, a big section of us didn't vote for him ever.
Right.
And didn't vote for any other war maker either. Any other of the capitalist candidates did not get our vote. But this is something you and I have wrangled with. In some ways, many ways actually, Obama has been actually worse than Bush.
Oh, absolutely.
He sucked people into supporting things that they never would have supported had there been a George Bush or a Ronald Reagan in charge.
Well, it's also demobilized movements and, you know, definitely fog some people's minds up. And I think that's the most tragic part about it is that, you know, we both have been struggling these last 6.5 years to really keep something alive in the movement. And we were talking before the call that we're very pleased that that Spring Rising seems to be picking up a lot more steam. As I proposed it, and there was nothing. We, you know, people on the call or people in the committee, they're like, well, we should send it out. Well, we sent it out everywhere. We got absolutely very mild, lukewarm support for having, a mobilization in Washington, D.C. around these issues. But now I think, and I think a lot of it has to do with the increasing, people are afraid of what's happening in Ukraine. People are talking about World War III. Now Obama has asked Congress for a new authorization to use military force against the Islamic State. But he's also said, I don't really need it because you already gave the president authorization to use military force in that region back in 2001, 2002, I think, was 01 Afghanistan and
01 was the overarching authorization for the use of military force that they've relied on exclusively to do everything. Yeah.
And so Obama has asked for it for political cover. But like you said, how do you authorize something that hasn't ever ended and, in fact, has recently been expanded?
Yeah, well, another aspect of the troubling part of this proposal by Obama is that he says there's a 3-year expiration date. Well, that, you know, I was looking back at the Patriot Act, which mm-hmm. had a 5-year expiration date in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
What has Congress done with that? It's more in effect than ever,
right?
Essentially. You know, those things never expire, and I think people should be very, very suspicious and leery of anyone being given the authority to wage on war on the world with no limitations on time or space. They're saying they can go after anyone associated with ISIS anywhere in the world, the same way that they said anyone associated with Al-Qaeda could be attacked and essentially killed anywhere in the world.
Right, and the thing with putting limitations on an authorization to use military force, Congress did actually try that and wanted the Bush regime to give updates every 6 months, I believe it was. And, you know, they can't put limits. Once they give the authorization, Congress has I hate to talk about the Constitution because, you know, the Constitution seems to only apply to us and not to the so-called ruling class. But, you know, they can't, the president's the commander in chief. The Congress can pay for or not pay for these things. So they can't, we have to recognize that even if a more acceptable AUMF goes through, and what I mean more acceptable to Obama supporters goes through, and we see people like my old nemesis Nancy Pelosi encouraging Congress to vote for the AUMF, even if they get a more acceptable version, it really doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't mean anything significant. And, you know, I think the biggest takeaway from this is, what is Congress in the first place? Congress mainly functions to give political legitimacy to what the ruling class has already decided to do or what they're struggling over. And I think there certainly are conflicts at the top. People who run this government don't have, unanimity about how to pursue, exactly how to pursue this war on terror that they seem to be bringing back. But they do have unanimity on the necessity for the U.S. to control the Middle East in particular, the most geostrategic part of the world, and the place that they can't let any other superpower develop in. Nothing can challenge the power of the U.S. So all the political structures that are set up in this country serve that, not democracy.
Right.
They're serving this capitalist imperialist system, its whole economic reach around the world with its billions of people working in sweatshops now, backed up by its military.
Right.
In possibly 1,500 bases, but we do know 150 countries that the U.S. is carrying out covert operations in this year. So we don't know the half of what's going on, really, in our name. We do know that there's debate over the AUMF, and we should be out there very stringently and, you know, stridently or loudly, as you put it, going against this and really letting the people of the world know that there are people in this country,
right,
a significant bunch of us, maybe led by a group that is way too small and not vocal enough, but there's a significant amount of people in this country who are not down for this war on the world whatsoever.
And that's super important, Deborah. Back in 2000 and I think it was the beginning of 2010, we had the first ever anti-drone protest. We held that in front of the CIA.
Right.
And I heard from people in Pakistan and northern Afghanistan just thanking me. They said before they saw that protest, they didn't know that there were people in the U.S. that cared about them. So that's a very important a component to our protests, is that we're in solidarity with occupied and oppressed people.
Yeah, and it's really important even more now because you have the rise of the Islamic fundamentalists, ISIS in particular, and we've both had the experience of running into people who say, well, you know, I used to be against the war, but now doesn't Obama have to do something about ISIS?
Right.
And they're going along with the bombings and, you know, which it hardly need to be said, but people don't think about this. Modern warfare principally kills civilians, non-combatants. This has been true over the last 60 years. That's who's dying in this. And look, ISIS is no damn good at all.
Right.
It is, you know, it is modeled on the slavery times from centuries and centuries ago. It's no good for women at all. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't even believe in the Enlightenment. Nobody would want to live in a society dominated by ISIS. But you have to come to grips with, if you live in this country, that it is not ISIS that killed a million people in Iraq.
Right.
It is not ISIS that has created this situation, you know, where people literally are being driven from the agricultural countryside around the world into the cities, you know, starving and really exploited. It is the global capitalist system of which the U.S. is a head. And if we don't challenge that structure and that system, really go up against it, and at least send out a message to the people of the world that there's another way to go at this, then we are not going to be in a situation to stop this, and people will still continue to be caught between a rock and a hard place, the rock of capitalist, imperialist war for empire, and the no answer of, you know, these completely outmoded feudal religious movements that want to take power and, you know, unfortunately are taking power.
Well, and another thing is people need to remember, they probably understood this when Bush was president, but they forgot it because now we have a Nobel Peace Prize winner as president, is that the U.S. Regularly has removed left-wing secular leaders from positions of power around the world because they were moving away from capitalism. They were moving towards using their country's resources to help the people. And so the U.S. is directly responsible for the rise of Islamic extremism.
Well, yeah, that's a big part of it. And then they were directly funding some of these forces back in the 80s in Afghanistan. That's where a lot of this started, the U.S. giving money and a lot of arms directly to forces against the Soviet Union in Afghanistan. And then we have to look at Iraq even right now. The U.S. put all of these arms and literally handed out stacks of $100 bills,
right,
particularly right at the beginning of the war.
Right.
This money went in the hands of all sorts of people, and then they imprisoned and tortured people who became, as you know, if we're to understand it from the news, future leaders of ISIS.
Well, absolutely.
The U.S. did this.
I was telling you about that documentary before the interview called Bitter Lake by Adam Curtis on the BBC. And it's about how U.S. British meddling has given rise to exactly where we are today. But when the U.S. and Great Britain took focus away from Afghanistan to Iraq, people like Ayman al-Zarqawi went from Afghanistan to Iraq, and they showed Ayman al-Zarqawi holding a weapon, and he said, "Look, I get to go kill Americans with weapons they gave me."
Mm-hmm.
And how do you think that made me feel?
Yeah, I mean, what we're up against right now is that both of these poles reinforce each other.
Right.
You know, that what the U.S. is doing, completely destabilizing the whole region. Like, look at Libya.
Right.
You know, these people in 2011 that went along with the so-called humanitarian intervention,
right,
of U.S. and NATO bombs and drones in Libya, they have to be ashamed of themselves right now. You destabilized that country, allowed all sorts of forces in, and it is now a complete disaster. There's no force that has any potential right now, and this is very sad, you know, to bring it about even a secular government at this point.
Tragic.
But the U.S. did this, and it did this at the point of, you know, a horrific military intervention where we know hundreds, if not thousands, of civilians were killed.
Well, it's like when that happened and we denounced it, we were accused of not caring about the people of Libya.
Mm-hmm.
And this was all Obama.
Right. And when we knew, you know, just look, take 1 second to look at history, we knew this was not going to help the people of Libya. We knew this was done for reasons that the U.S. ruling class decided it was needed for their own interests. When they act, it is never actually for the people, including the people of this country.
Let's get back to Spring Rising a little bit, Deborah. You have kind of taken the role as, I don't know, keeping everything together. I don't even know what we want to say. But I think what we have planned for those few days, very exciting. and you've been working really hard on the teach-in. So I'll fill our listeners in on the bus tour, but why don't you fill the listeners in on the teach-ins? Because to me, this has been an incredible outpouring of people who want to become involved, and I think that it's going to be two solid days of some really wonderful information.
Mm-hmm. We're actually doing 6 teach-in panels, and we're going to live stream these around the world, I suppose, wherever the internet reaches. Back when you and I were talking in December, I said I felt if there's one thing that happens in addition to a march at the White House and the Capitol, which we felt was really important, it would be a teach-in about this very question we were just talking about. What's the attraction of Islamic fundamentalism, the Islamic State? What's the U.S.'s interest in this? And I mean the government's interest. And then there's what's our interest? What should be our response to this? And I felt that one thing would be a huge service, really, to people trying to understand what's going on, and directing them towards opposing, you know, the U.S. interest and the U.S. plans, which are forming and really bad. So we are going to do a teaching, which you're going to moderate about that. I think it'll be really interesting. We'll have people with a great knowledge of Iraq and a great knowledge of history speaking on that. We're also doing a very interesting one that we put together by popular demand, and it is about what are the connections and the challenges faced by people who are working to stop targeted murder, targeted killing by the U.S. around the world, and those people who are working to stop U.S. law enforcement from killing with impunity, the Black Lives Matter movement, broadly speaking. We're going to put those representatives and key activists from those movements at the beginning of the teach-in and have people respond to all of this. So we want a really vibrant atmosphere, Veterans for Peace, Military Families Speak Out, World Beyond War is also involved in presenting parts of these teach-ins. So that'll be Thursday evening starting at 7, March 19th. 7 to 10 or so, and then Friday, March 20th, from 3 to 10 p.m., we'll have 4 panels at the University of District Columbia Law School. And this is really important. Protest makes a huge difference. It's essential. You can't have any big change without people being in the streets. We also need to take time to really understand what's going on and to be able to frame a vision forward. So that's what we're trying to do with the teach-ins.
Like I said, it's just coming together very well, very exciting. And I just want to go over the rest of the schedule. We're starting Wednesday, March 18th, and we're starting with a meet and greet, and hopefully we're going to be putting on a play called Grounded about drones, and at the meet and greet. The meet and greet will also be for, community building, messaging over the weekend, but also, like we were talking on our conference call, we have to be flexible to, in case the vote for the authorization to use military force is going to be around that time, if it has happened, if it's going to happen soon. Nobody really knows when the votes are going to take place. And then Thursday, there's opportunity for going to Congress. Code Pink is bottom lining that piece of the week. And then also on Thursday, we're having the People Rising bus tour of war crime sites around Washington, D.C. And like I've said, it was hard to narrow it down to a 4-hour tour because you can't throw a stone in Washington, D.C. without hitting a war criminal. And so we're going to, like, the World Bank, the IMF, several people who profit off of war, think tanks like the American Enterprise Institute, AIPAC, places that are intimately connected to, you know, what we believe are the real forces behind our government. And so I think that's going to be really fun. We're getting a lot of interest in that. And then the Answer Coalition is bottom lining and helping to organize the rally and march on Saturday. And do you want to talk briefly about that?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I think this is another way in which Spring Rising is connecting, maybe more so since early last fall. And that's because of the biggest wave of mass protests we've had in this country in decades.
Yes.
Around the police murder
right.
of Michael Brown and Eric Garner in particular. And I've noticed that people are much more interested now in the idea of protest, and why not? We wouldn't even be having a conversation about police murder if the people in the neighborhood in Ferguson, Missouri on August 9th of 2014 hadn't stayed out in the streets for hours and gotten more and more angry mm-hmm. about Michael Brown's body laying in the street. And I think people are looking, I hope, now in a different way about the need for visible protest. On Saturday, March 21st, we're going to gather at noon at Lafayette Park across from the White House. We're going to have a short rally. We're going to have music and performances. It's going to be very visual. And then we're marching through Chinatown, where a lot of the Black Lives Matter protests have taken place, including rallies in intersections, including die-ins, including, you know, visible and really earnest outreach to the people on the streets in Chinatown, which is about the only lively area
yes.
in Washington on a weekend, right?
Right.
That we can easily walk to. And then uh-huh. we're going to the Capitol. And I think it's going to be well worth being there. Look, we haven't had a major national Washington protest about this war in years. 2007 was the last really large one that we had, and it makes a difference. As you said, people around the world need to see us. And they need to get this message. No, we won't go along with war on the world.
And the movement has questioned Saturday protests, but we're combining it with, you know, things. If people can make it during the week, there's going to be plenty of opportunities for protest, for community building. And like I said on our last call, I think the most important thing we can do in this time that we're going to be gathering from around the country is to see how do we go forward. And what I think is how do we go forward outside of the two bourgeois capitalist parties? Not are we going to rally around Hillary Clinton for president in 2016 when we all know that you know she's a big war criminal also. So
oh, you mean the politician that just about last year decided that it was wrong that she supported the Iraq war, that one?
Well, she said she might have made a mistake, she said. But yeah, so I think that's really important is in movement building. And that's why I'm so excited that so many of these organizations that I didn't even really know existed anymore are coming together to endorse and support in any way they can Spring Rising.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right, and we're making a call right now to you who are listening. It's still a month away. Come to D.C., number one. Number two, if you can't come to D.C., do a solidarity action where you are on the 12th anniversary of Shock and Awe. We will help you. We'll send you materials. We are designing posters and flyers and all of that stuff. You can use them where you are. And number three is, especially if you can't do either, make a donation on the GoFundMe campaign to help fund the travel and all, and the expenses that are needed. Look, most all of us in our organizations are paying our way there. Individuals are covering their own transportation and housing. But if people need assistance to get there, would not otherwise be able to come, we want to be in a situation to fund or at least help people fund that. So go to the GoFundMe campaign at Soapbox People's Network.
And that can be reached through springrising.org.
Yes.
And so, Deborah, tell us how people can reach you and help support World Can't Wait, which I always say one of the organizations that has been very principled throughout, well, since your beginning, but especially since 06, 07 when people were starting to wind down their anti-war activism because the Democrats were still funding the wars and not stopping them. So really can't be anti-war if our political party is supporting them.
Right. Well, it's been important to us to stick to our principles that humanity and the planet come first. And we've done that, and I think people can find us very easily at worldcan'twait.net or on Facebook. I'm on Twitter, and so is World Can't Wait, and we're very interested in engaging with people, including on the very hard questions of looking at Islamic fundamentalism now as targeted as the enemy. Well, they aren't any good, and they are very dangerous for people in those regions. But that does not mean we have to then start waving the banner of U.S. empire and U.S. exploitation of those countries either. And this is a big problem that we're working on, and World Can't Wait provides a very important way, I think, for people to engage in that. And we're happy to be part of this coalition with you and others around Spring Rising. And I... very glad to be working with you one more time, and yeah. It won't be the last.
Again, no, probably not. Well, yeah. Deborah, I was going to say that you said that the teach-ins were going to be, what's that called?
Live streamed.
And yeah. We're hoping to do that for most everything on Spring Rising. And if people can't come to Washington, D.C., there's already some solidarity actions springing up. But if you want to have a solidarity action in your community, just get a hold of us at springrising.org, and we'll try to help connect you with other organizations or people near you that you can do something. We know that San Francisco, some of the local organizations of national endorsers are coming together to try and plan something, and we're starting to hear things pop up. We really would prefer people to come to D.C. if possible, but if it's not possible, because we know it's not all the time, then we would certainly appreciate you to spread the live stream around. Be engaged with us that way. We're going to take questions online from people throughout the events, or contact us at springrising.org, and really let's put people over politics, and let's put peace above profit.
All right.
Thank you, Deborah.
Yeah, it's great to be on the show. Thanks, Cindy.
Okay, we'll talk soon, I'm sure. Have a great weekend. Don't freeze to death.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Well, that's Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox for today. I hope you go to springrising.org and worldcan'twait.net for more information about what Deborah Sweet and World Can't Wait are doing and about our upcoming action in D.C. called Spring Rising. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar. I'd like to thank my production assistant, Dee Dee Miller. I'd like to thank Deborah for her principled activism and for helping with Spring Rising. And I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.